Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
We're here with Ken McCusick, Film Study Baltimore.com. Ken, good morning to you. How are you?
Hey, Rob. How's it going?
I'm doing well. Now, the Ravens, big win, one-point win over the Cincinnati Bengals. Lou Anarumo, who is the DC for the Cincinnati Bengals, looked like he had some dilemmas last week on Thursday night. What did the Ravens do to give him those dilemmas?
Yeah, both teams had some good change of game plan, but the Ravens' big one was they lined up in these 2x2 formations with two receivers outside the numbers on both sides, which you almost never see. But what that forced to do was a light box that the Bengals played with, and they had to give the Ravens some plays where they were able to run the ball effectively against either five or six in the box, and that's a big disadvantage. Looking forward to Pittsburgh this week, that's the kind of thing you get Patrick Queen a one-on-one with Derrick Henry face-to-face. I think that'd be good for the Ravens.
I think it's going to be better with him and Pat Ricard. I think Ricard threatened to pancake him as soon as he went to Pittsburgh. Do you think I'm assuming you saw the frustration on the Bengals' face when they mm-hmm. couldn't, it's like one of those, come on! Like, they just, whatever we do, like, we still can't deal with these guys. Pittsburgh's a different team, and they seem to always have a good defense. This game is all about matchups. What makes this different versus, you know, facing the Bengals?
So I'd say the edge rushers, for starters, are at a higher level. So you start off with Miles Murphy, who's not bad for the Bengals facing Rosengarten, and you move up to T.J. Watt. Now, the Steelers did have a serious injury at the end of their game this last week with Highsmith going out. So they've got Preston Smith, unfortunately, mm-hmm. that they acquired near the trade deadline. So, bummer.
Hey, I want to ask you, how different, in your opinion, did the offense look with Likely being out? Was there anything that you saw in particular that they were doing, whether you liked it or didn't like it?
Yeah, they're much lighter without Likely there, so they have three players that they have to rotate snaps to instead of four at that tight end position, and they're one of the heaviest teams. Well, they still are the heaviest team in the NFL, even though they've greatly reduced the number of tight ends, fullbacks, and six offensive linemen they have on per play. At 1.63 this last week, they were still very high for NFL standards, but very low for the Ravens.
Ken McCusick joins us from FilmStudyBaltimore.com. Ken, why was Flowers A-dot so low on Thursday night?
A lot of passes behind the line of scrimmage. Yeah. Try and get some screen passes going. And they've got other guys who can do that job now. So Keaton Mitchell is back. Hopefully he'll take over some of that. And Deontay Johnson, that should be a big part of what he's doing too, is trying to be escapable on some wide receiver screens and whatnot. But Flowers is very good at it, and it's just a shame because Flowers is a near perfect passer rating throwing to him between 10 and 19 yards, and they're not really taking advantage of that the way they should.
And we've been hiding Tylan Wallace's light under a barrel, or was this just an anomaly? Oh,
it's very cool that the Ravens have a talent like that hidden. And hopefully he's a survivor in this league. I think, you know, he's the kind of guy the Ravens would love to keep around on a series of two-year contracts if somebody else doesn't say, hey, wait a minute, how about that guy with 30 yards of catch?
Hey, Ken, with the injury to Kyle Hamilton, how much does that hurt them going into the Steelers game if he doesn't play? Do you think there is a viable option to replace him, or is it going to take many people?
I mean, there's no replacement for Kyle Hamilton, so they've got to put somebody else in that same general space to do what in theory is his job. But Kyle Hamilton's the best tackler on the team, other than maybe Roquan, and you know, he flies all over the place making plays. It's there's nobody to take away the strong side of the field like him. So they're very short on players, and I think, you know, some of the changes that have been talked about or rumored about coming up this week have to revolve around how they replace him.
Again, I mean, you're watching this film, and Cincinnati Bengals and Baltimore Ravens have played in some explosive games, close games this year. What does Cincinnati do to bring that out of the Baltimore Ravens, the absolute best and the absolute worst?
Yeah, I mean, they definitely force them into a situation where they have to score all the way through a game. They can't ever take their foot off the gas against the Cincinnati Bengals. Also, these teams know each other very well, and yet they're still trying to scheme differently for each other. So the first game, for example, the Bengals used 15 simulated pressures. And I define that as when two or more players drop off the line of scrimmage. This last game, they used zero. So it's obviously frustrating the Bengals that they haven't really found the magic formula, the magic bullet to stop Lamar. But Boy, it's you know, you see both these teams trying like hell to figure out what will beat the other.
Pass rush was good. The pass rush has been good, despite the fact we don't have a pass rusher, really. How would we match up with the Steelers' offensive line?
Yeah, I think reasonably well. Travis Jones is really the key to the pass rush, mm-hmm. and he came back. They've had three straight weeks out where their pass rush had been down extremely, about a 50% ample time and space rate. That means they're giving away a 3-second pocket and the ability to step into a throw. Last week he was back. They're back down to 29%, which is about what they've been in the other games, the first six games of the year. So he's really the key to the entire pass rush. If he's there, then your edge rushers look better. Matabike, who's his running mate, they're almost always on the field together, is a lot better with Travis Jones there. And, you know, other things you can do. Basically, there's a man already, one more man already accounted for blocking Travis Jones. So he's the key.
I want to get your thoughts on Deontay Johnson. I mean, he had a cryptic tweet that he put out that had everybody saying, oh, is he upset at the team? I don't know what the hell it meant. But do you think we didn't see him as much because it's just still too soon, picking up the playbook and all those things? And they have other options, too.
Yeah, column B I'll take, because I think it's really a case of Flowers and Bateman are too good to be replaced. And so Deontay Johnson, if anything, he's going to help their 11 personnel package, which the Ravens just don't use all that often. Remember, I said they, you know, talked about the number of tight ends and whatnot they put on the field. When they put two tight ends on the field, there's no room for Deontay Johnson. If you want Flowers and Bateman on that, don't know why you wouldn't over him.
The only other thing I could see is some version of a five wide with the two tight ends and Lamar being almost like what the Bills do from time to time, where Lamar is essentially the running back, but then you're taking Derrick Henry off the field. Yep, like, exactly. So pick your poison.
Ken McKusick joins us in studio, 410-583-1057. That's the number if you want to get it with him. Big, another divisional game coming up this Sunday, Baltimore Ravens against the Pittsburgh Steelers. How difficult will it be for the Ravens to win the division if they lose this game? Ken McKusick will answer that question and more up next right here on The Fan. Coming up on 8:15 in the a.m., Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on The Fan. Orioles General Manager Mike Elias joins us at 8:30 to talk all things Orioles. But right now, Ken McKusick from FilmStudyBaltimore.com is in studio. Ken, the Baltimore Ravens take on the Pittsburgh Steelers and was one of the better rivalries in all of the National Football League. The AFC North right now, Pittsburgh 7-2 after a win on Sunday. Great play by Russell Wilson. Great throw to Mike Williams towards the end of that game. Ravens are 7-3, just a half game back of the Pittsburgh Steelers. So why it would be almost nearly possible for the Ravens to win a division with a loss on Sunday?
Yeah, it becomes much more difficult. They probably have to outright the Steelers if they only split the division, being beaten by a game in total. Tiebreakers don't work out for them really at all in terms of the common games tiebreaker, which I think the best they can do is tie. The conference tiebreaker comes after that, and the Ravens already have a bunch of wins against the NFC, so that's bad for winning for your in-conference record if you end up in a tie. So they really need to either win two games against the Steelers or win one and have it come back to division games, which is a much tougher road that they'll have to have them lose some games to the Bengals and Browns.
Just the Steelers do have a tough schedule down the stretch.
Yeah, one of the tougher ones.
They play a lot of good teams, including what the Chiefs, yep. Bills, I think. They have a handful of them.
They have the Ravens, they have the Eagles, they have the Chiefs. They have the Ravens twice, the Eagles and the Chiefs.
Okay, and then the Browns twice too, I think, in there.
We're talking about the tough part.
it's a rivalry game.
They have the Bengals twice as well.
Yeah.
This is their first divisional game.
Yep.
Crazy.
Yeah. We're just talking about Kyle Hamilton being, I think Kyle's one of the best, maybe the best tackler on the team. I think Roquan's taken a little bit of a step back. Now you get Najee Harris, he's was second in the league with the forced tackles,
mm-hmm.
broken MTFs. Tackles, MTFs, yep. Whatever, you know, broken tackles essentially. How much of a problem would that be?
It could certainly be a problem. I mean, they have a problem on the other side as well. The Ravens are the best tackling team in the entire NFL. That's one of the things about the OR defense that has really worked out. They've got a 10.2% mm-hmm. missed tackle rate for the year. And you look at PFF grades, they're way ahead. But the Steelers are the second best team.
Yeah.
But they have Patrick Queen in the middle, who's a big liability. So that's the guy the Ravens want to get level two opportunities
a lot of
against
reasons.
For Henry. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
What do you think of the offensive line on Thursday night's game?
Yeah, so I just go through it briefly. Stanley, not that great, honestly. Five pressures, a third of a quarterback hit. Ended up with a D. Every offensive lineman got penalized in this game, including Fa'alele twice. They stalled three drives with offensive line penalties, which is obviously very bad. But A minus for McCary, A minus for Linderbaum. They were both good. Fa'alele and Rosengard on the right side both had difficulties and were D's there. Full accounting for that is out on my website, so I don't bore people with every detail there.
Ken McCusick, filmstudybaltimore.com. Ken, as the MVP's race, it really starts to crank up a little bit. We saw, as Jeremy pointed out, Jared Goff had 80-something yards passing, and his team scored 50 points. This past weekend, he threw five touchdowns, and his team still won.
Five interceptions.
His team still won. I don't know, and I got to throw Daniels in there also from Washington. I don't know between Daniels, Josh Allen, and Lamar Jackson, I find it hard to find three players who impact their team's win or losses more so than those three players.
You know why? Because you're not looking at wide receivers and running backs. That's why.
in terms of you know, their success equals win. If they don't succeed, equals loss. I don't know three players that dictate that more than those three.
Yeah, I'd agree. Daniels has a relatively low touchdown total. He's got like 10 touchdown passes or something. So I think it's Lamar all the way. In fact, I just looked at the odds across the board this morning. You'd be interested, Jeremy, but I had an implied 40% roughly chance that Lamar would win the award after you take out the juice. And I think it's better than that. I think it's a great futures bet right now.
I do too. And I'm knocking on wood. The only way that I think he doesn't come down with this MVP award this year and make it three is if he gets hurt, because he's playing at such a high level that even if he takes a huge step back, his numbers are still going to be better than almost everybody in the league. And then you start to look at the rushing numbers as well. You in the front row.
Ed had a great point as well, though. I agree with you, injury, but I think he could play the rest of the season and still not get it. If someone feels, you know what?
You need a lot of people to feel that way.
We're tired of giving it to him. The Michael Jordan effect, the LeBron James effect. We're sick of giving it to him. So let's let somebody else get it.
Okay.
It does worry me that's going to happen, because, I mean, he's the clear choice right now.
There's clearly people that are going to do it. I just don't know that you'll have a mass majority do that.
Yeah.
He's only missed one vote in his two times.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, that's incredible.
Not only has he won it twice, but only one person didn't vote for him.
And that person forgot to show up. He didn't come to work. He thought it was his day off. You know, that's what happened.
After this bye, you know, the Hamilton injury, what changes? I mean, I think people were expecting coaching changes, but what changes do you expect after this bye? Now they had, you know, a little break facing the division rival for the division title.
Yeah, this is the opportunity to make some changes in the secondary, make some changes. Coaching was the first one. Could be included. A change in responsibilities. The soft change of responsibilities would be to have Harbaugh hawk the defensive backs, because he's been a defensive backs coach in the past, and he can look over that very closely. Stevens moving to the back end, which is something I would advocate, has already been ruled out. I think it's for now. I think there's an implied for now in there. I think it could happen at the bye week. But it's not going to happen right now, so we'll see.
Do you think they get a little mirror for Steven's face mask?
That'd be nice.
Because he hasn't turned around, so he can see it.
Yeah.
Get a little rear view, side view over there where he can check it out. So, interesting enough, as we start to look at this Ravens team and we talk about, and I think, Ed, you correct me if I'm wrong, you sent this out to the group about them playing zone versus them playing man. Do you have a preference with them defensively and what you think they're better in, or is it come as... from a team-to-team standpoint and who they're playing.
Yeah, team-to-team, what your opponent's doing, who your opposing quarterback is, whether you need to contain him or not, what the situation is in the game. I mean, you want to play softer with in-zone defense, give up some short throws if you have a big lead. The Ravens have found themselves in that spot from time to time. And there are some receivers it's probably the better option against. So a handful of factors.
Yeah, because I think the numbers he pulled up is Joe Burrow struggled against man defense.
Man, yeah. And I think they're better than man, because they look very confused to me in zone. I mean, they're looking at each other. They're just looking at the Jamar Chase, that bomb that Burrow dropped in the bucket. There were three defenders there. Nobody was closer than 7 yards. It was ridiculous.
Ken McCusick, filmstudybaltimore.com. Ken, looking at that All-22, man. There was a time where you could see with the Ravens, you take away the run, make Lamar Jackson the passer, pocket passer, you beat the Ravens. What is the best way now to stop the Ravens offense?
I don't know if there's a team that's figured that out yet. It's a lot of fun, because Lamar this week, for example, was under pressure 11 times, ATS 11 times, the ball out quick 11 times. The three ways that I stratify how the quarterback is under pressure. His best, he was under pressure. 12.8 yards per throw when under pressure. So if you can get after him and he still could do that to you, I don't know how you beat him. And the Lamar mesh point with Derrick Henry is the most powerful single weapon in the NFL right now. Nobody has figured out how to decode it.
How do you feel about this game? As you look at it now, the way the Ravens are the Steelers for real? I mean, we've seen them play here and there. Are they as good as their record indicates?
Probably not quite, but I'm a probabilistic guy. I'd say, 60 to 65% is the right range for a chance to win, and that's not 100, so mm-hmm. I'm worried.
So one other thing I wanted to bring up, just as far as, you look at this offense and seeing Keaton Mitchell back, what are your thoughts on how he gets, we get to see a little bit of him, gets implemented in this offense, and do we see more of him as the season goes on, in your opinion?
I think we'll certainly see more of him. So we've seen him as a kick returner, and that's the first thing and his biggest duty right now. And then we saw him twice in the backfield, one run, that got negated by penalty, so he still doesn't have a carry officially for the year. I think we'll see him have, maybe four carries this week. Sorry, not carries, snaps in the backfield this week. And I think we may see him a few more snaps out on the wing, as a
like some jet sweep
flanker
types,
jet motion kind of thing. Yeah.
Okay.
Kevin Cusick, Film Study Baltimore. Tell everybody why they should join Film Study.
Sure. I mean, all kinds of stuff out there, offense, defense. You got all the podcasts you would want with 9 per week and 2 articles, one on the defense, one on the offensive line primarily.
There you go. 410-583-1057 is the number. Thank you very much, Ken. Talk to you next Tuesday. Kevin Willard joins us at 9 o'clock. We got Shovels at 8:45, but on the other side, all things Orioles. General Manager Mike Elias joins us on the Fan.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
8:30 in the a.m. Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on the Fan. Ed Norris, Rob Long, Jeremy Kahn. Joining us right now, General Manager of the Baltimore Orioles. He is Mike Elias. What's going on, Mike?
Hey, Rob, how are you?
Doing well, man. It just seems like, I know from the broadcasting standpoint, all three of us are broadcasters, but we're also big Oriole fans. Feels a little different going into free agency this year as opposed to last year or years in the past. Does it have a different feel for you this year?
Well, I think we're excited to get going. We just had the general manager meetings, MLB meetings last week in Texas. Mm-hmm. And that's where all the clubs and major agents get together and start initiating conversations about the off season. A lot of good information to be had there. But we are definitely poised to assess the market and invest where we want to invest. And as everyone knows, we've got a new ownership group, and this is their first off season, and it puts us in a position to really be able to examine everything. And that's a great thing for us as the front office. Doesn't mean we can or will do everything, but we're in a position to make the best investments possible for the short and long term for the team. And so that's what we're going to go into the market trying to do.
People are excited because there is a new ownership and things appear to have changed in that way. But when people look at the Major League Baseball in general, they always complain about big markets. You can't compete with them. And then you look at the championship series. The Yankees, Dodgers, and Mets all went to the league championships. Are they far wrong? Can everybody compete on the same playing field with these big market teams?
Yeah, look, it's not a fair system. There are big disparities between the teams that are in large cities with more local revenue, more corporate bases, more TV revenue, and those that are on the smaller side. And the way that the economic system is set up between the players and the teams, it makes it so that large market teams can naturally spend and generate more money. And it creates a lot of disparities. There's some countermeasures to that. The smaller market teams get an extra draft pick here and there. But generally, it puts a lot of pressure on a small market team to draft well, to develop well, to have a good international program, to have a really kind of first-rate organization. And so that's a big part of what we've been doing here the last few years, laying that foundation. And then hopefully we're very optimistic we're going to be able to kind of grow our financial footing here as we renovate the ballpark, as we do smarter things around the organization, and keep growing the franchise. But until that system stays in place, you know, there's always going to be uneven footing between New York and Los Angeles and Milwaukee and Pittsburgh. That's just the way the system's set up.
Mike, can I ask you about the young guys on the team, Kobe Mayo, Jackson Holiday, and eventually Sam Bassayo, what you see in these guys? Because I think a lot of fans that want you to go out and spend money on free agency don't necessarily look at what you have in-house and what you can do with those guys. How difficult is it to juggle that and find spots for these guys?
Well, the trio you mentioned, it's a really special group of very young position player prospects, and they're all three of them are like consensus top 10, top 15 prospects in all of baseball. And they're all in their early 20s. And, you know, it's a really exciting group. It's probably one of the better ones I've been around in terms of young position players. And they're all at the high levels now. Jackson and Kobe got a taste of the major leagues last year. And, you know, you see the difficulties in transitioning to the majors from what they did. But now I think they're going to be better off for it. They kind of got that monkey off their back, and they're going to have some experience and an understanding of what they're getting into in spring training next year. And then Sam Bassayo is a really exciting catching prospect that's been a product of our Latin program that we started several years ago when our group got here. It's one, our first big bonus baby, and we gave him like $1.3 million, developed him, and he's got an enormous arm, huge power, made his way up to AAA this year as a 19-year-old. Very likely that he'll start the year back in AAA. But I'm really looking forward to seeing what he looks like and what he does this season. And, you know, once you're in AAA doing well, all bets are off in terms of when your debut could happen.
Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on the Fan. Mike Elias, Orioles general manager, joins us this morning. Mike, you won 192 games over the past two seasons. You know, outstanding. More than I'm probably sure you expected the position to be in. But has yet to win a playoff series. With so many young prospects coming up and so many young prospects available, how tough is it to decide whether or not you bring these guys up because they're ready or to maybe look for veterans who are ready right now? Is that a tough decision to make or you know, without giving us what your answer is, you already know the plan moving forward?
Well, I think we got to try to strike a balance for, between making sure that there are some there's some veteran stability, insurance, leadership on the roster, but not totally blocking the path for players that we have that project to be big contributors over the next 6 years. So we'll have to do that as we put the roster together. But it's you know, it's certainly been a frustration to win 192 games the last couple of years, but then have such a disappointing playoff result both times. And, you know, it can be tough to fixate too heavily on the playoff component of it, but that's kind of what I'm trying to do this offseason. You know, we know we're in good shape as an organization. We've had tremendous regular season success, but we want to push through that next step. And I think that, you know, trying to target the right veterans is a big part of that recipe.
Mike, you can have enough pitching. You guys get decimated with injuries last year, sadly. One of the things that people talked about was the, I don't know, the lack of attractiveness or the reluctance of pitchers to come here because it was a bandbox for a long time. Has it, first, is that true? And second, since the wall was moved back in left field, has it gotten easier to attract, you know, big time pitchers?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, that's why we made the move initially is, you know, basically anyone you talked to around the organization talked about how difficult it was to pitch here. And, you know, the Orioles had a long history of struggling to develop starting pitching, struggling to sign starting pitching on anything other than kind of overcooked contracts. And so I don't think that was a good formulas for success, but we have a very strong pitching program now, and we've had really good seasons at the major league level on the pitching side a few years in a row. And, you know, we're looking to add to our rotation this offseason, but I think we've got a pretty good start with Eflin and Grayson and Dean Kramer and Cade Povich and a lot of these guys coming back, it's a pretty good start. So I like where our pitching staff's at. I think the bullpen is something that you're always looking to improve. But there again, I think we've got a good start there to kick off the offseason with the returning players that we have. And, you know, we're just going to try to add talent over the course of the winter to keep bolstering because, like you said, you know, you never have enough pitching, and you've got to assume that whatever your group looks like at the beginning of spring training, some of those guys are unfortunately going to peel off with arm injuries.
Mike, with how young this team is, do you think it's imperative to add a veteran bat in the offseason?
Well, we're definitely going to explore it. You know, I think imperative, you know, is a strong word, but it's something that we want to do. I think one challenge for us is we have a lot of returning position players that fill out the lineup pretty nicely just with the young guys. So we've got to look at the right profiles to make sure that this veteran that we're bringing in fits in well, has the right amount of playing time, gels with the rest of the lineup. So, you know, that can make things a little trickier as you go through the offseason trying to find the right guy and thread the needle, but it's definitely on the shopping list for us to bring in some position player help.
There he is, Mike Elias, Orioles general manager. Mike, thanks a lot for your time, man, and I'm sure I can speak for Ed and Jeremy. We are excited about free agency to see where we go from here.
Thanks, Rob.
All right, have a good
work.
Have a good one.
Is he going to text us who they're picking up now?
He said back to her. He already texted me. This is a big name.
Oh, he said, I love he said back to work.
No days off.
Back to work means I hope we didn't block him from signing somebody doing the 10 minutes on the show.
Oh.
See, was there any breaking news up there,
if
Joe?
Something came over just now. It'd be fantastic.
Well, it'd be even better if it was the Orioles. What if there was a breaking news for the Orioles while he was on this show? I am, though. I'm not kidding. I'm excited about free agency this year. Normally, I feel like it's dead, lame duck.
Definitely new sheriff in town. It just feels different.
He didn't say it, but I definitely think there's trades coming down because there's mm-hmm. too many. That's what I keep mm-hmm. bringing up. There's too many position players. And it, from him saying Basayu is more than likely going to start off in the minors at the beginning of the year, yeah. which I think maybe that has more to do with his clock than him actually being ready. But you don't have to rush any guys here now. This isn't the old Orioles regime where you're like, he's good, bring him up right away. You got a filter. You've got like layers of this.
So who's your backup catcher then to start the season?
But, I mean, I know a lot of people brought up Kyle Higashioka. But again, I don't think you need to make that type of move. I think it just needs to be someone to bridge that gap until you're ready for him.
While you're here, I'm a bridge. Yeah. That's it.
I mean, there's a lot of guys that realize who they are when they get their opportunity. Maybe they do bring a James McCann back. But my assumption would be when Basayu is ready that he doesn't have a spot on
him. I'm sure McCann knows that. There's a better offer out there. He's not taking that.
I mean, I think McCann settled with his role here fantastic. I mean, he was a starting catcher, obviously, before he got here.
But I'm saying his role now would be just for like a month or two until Basayu's here.
I don't think he's going to settle for that. Yeah. I don't think he's going to go for that. He's going to have other opportunities. But what he did with the Orioles here, he'll have other opportunities that are more stable. Than the
he can start. I mean, for sure. He'd be the everyday catcher for a lot of teams.
Well, there's also to look at some of these guys and what I've talked about. Can Jackson Holliday move to the outfield? Is it something that they're eventually going to do? What happens with Cedric Mullins? Who's your right fielder? If you kick the tires on Teoscar Hernandez, you're probably not bringing back Santander. And now you've got all these guys to move around. We talked about Bregman. And if you bring him in, what that does. Where's Kobe Mayo playing next year?
First world problems. Kevin Willard joins us at 9 o'clock, but on the other side, Ed Norris, giving out shovels.
Yeah, I'm giving shovels to all the people in this country who have no sense of humor anymore.
If you have a shovel, give us a call. Give us a text, 410-583-1057. Hit us up on Twitter, at BBMS, 1057 The Fan. Shovels next.
The biggest idiots deserve the big, bad shovel of wisdom. Sponsored by Jerry's Toyota. And their exclusive benefits, including free service maintenance for 4 years or 50,000 miles. Visit Jerry's Toyota just north of the Beltway on Bel Air Road and online at jerrystoyota.com. 1057 The Fan.
Time to give out shovels. If you have a shovel, give us a call. Give us a text. 410-583-1057. Hit us up on Twitter. at BBMS 105.7 The Fan. Ed Norris, we'll get your shovel.
People who cannot laugh if their life depended on it. I don't know if you saw this. Bill Burr did the opening monologue on SNL. And I know I speak for I think he's one of the best comedic minds out there right now. Very funny guy, in my opinion. I know we have other fans in the studio who like him as well. He did a monologue. And granted, I thought it was about 20% of what he could do. Because you know how he is. He does not give a bleep. Like good comedians. Well, that's what they do.
That's what they're supposed to do.
But like, he did what he, you know, he was talking about COVID. He was talking about the election. He was talking about this. And he made comments like he does in every show I've ever seen him put on. He talked about Asians, you know, made you know, jokes alluding to Asians bringing COVID because he couldn't figure out how he got the flu or COVID, didn't know. And he mentions that. He talked about feminists. He talked about, you know, made a crack about unattractive women. Oh, you know, feminists, I mean. And just stuff that he does, and it's just part of his repertoire. And I found it to be funny, but it's not nearly as funny as his cable, you know, specials. Mm-hmm. Because I think he had to tone it down because of what happened. He got eviscerated on Twitter, on X.
This happened last time he did it, too, I think.
Yeah, and people were like, he's making fun of Asians and feminists. Welcome to Trump's America. Like, go get... Seriously, go blank yourself. Like... Well, he's a comedian.
I said this to you before. Like, so I was doing the Meats voice earlier, and I stopped doing all those voices on the air. Whether you thought they were good or bad, I know some were really bad, but like doing them on the air because there's always that one person that complains, and I don't know why the loud minority is the ones that get over on the silent majority when it comes to this. And just because you're offended doesn't make you right.
Right. And this is what these guys, what they do is they say what other people are thinking. Unfortunately, so many people are afraid to do it, which is why you stop. I'm toned down from my beginning in radio, way down. I saw all kinds of jokes like that. And I just don't do it anymore. But these guys, they keep people honest. And think about George Carlin, Lenny Bruce, Bill Dave Hicks. Chappelle. Yeah. You know, these guys, they say things that other people get uncomfortable with, but they're funny and they're honest.
There's a difference between hate speech and comedy, and, yes. and I think you can see through it most of the time.
But at the same time, you got to understand that, you know, you say they speak for what other people are thinking, not what everybody's thinking. So the people who don't think that, we're going to push back. Everybody's not thinking that.
Yeah, no, not everybody.
Everybody. So
well,
those,
that's who he's
those,
giving the shovel to, those the people that are thinking the other way.
Those people push back. They just may not see the world that way. That's all. I mean, I think it's funny, but everybody's not going to think that's funny. And for us to think that everybody's going to think like us.
Nobody's saying that you have to find it funny.
You like shows that I don't like.
Yeah.
Large part of America may like the show. I have no interest in the Yellowstone.
But I'm not offended that you don't like the show that I like. That's the difference.
Right, it's the difference.
Because it's not a personal attack, though.
But I'm saying, you're missing the point of what he's talking about.
No, I'm
not.
The people who don't think that's funny find that you're personally attacking people. Do I think you're personally attacking people? Do you? No. But there are people who believe you're personally attacking people. That's just how it works.
It's comedy. I'm just so sick of this.
Just like you're not offended, just because you're not offended doesn't make it right.
But I don't understand that.
I don't understand how we don't think that some people find it offensive. I don't find it offensive because it's
those
not a
are
person.
The people he's giving the shovel to, the ones that find it offensive.
But it's okay for them to find it offensive.
I just don't know if it's okay for them to go to Twitter and light him on fire. Or this is his job.
It's cancel.
You don't like him, don't watch
top.
Him. Yeah.
Who's your shovel, Jeremy?
Some people may not understand it, but this is consensus reports. People ask me a lot of times with gambling, where do I go to find where the money's coming in? So for the longest period of time, I went to a website called wagerline.com. It's not a perfect, it's basically, it was covers.com, they combined. So you usually click on the tabs of consensus reports. What are consensus reports? They're where it tells you where the money's coming in on either side. So I like to go to some smaller ones where I kind of get a feel for what people are betting. And then there's other ones like Scores and Odds where you can go to theirs, but you really got to go later in the day for the money really to come in because everything looks like, oh, everyone's betting the favorite and everyone's betting the over. And then you can trust some different sports books that put out their information. There are guys online saying all the money's coming in on this side or that side. So getting to the point with these two websites, so let's say on wagerline.com, I want to find out who everybody's betting on in the NBA. There's no NBA tab. They didn't create one for this season. There's a WNBA tab still up there. There's a CFL tab. But if I want to look at where the money's coming in the NBA, I have to do it with all the leagues and scroll through every game, which, again, this is a me problem. But can you imagine looking for the Orlando Magic game when there's 100 college basketball games on there? And the same thing for you, Scores and Odds, you jackasses. You don't have any college basketball consensus reports. I've emailed both of them and haven't heard back from either one saying, I understand that it's not a big deal to some people, but this is where I go so every day.
You can't categorize it.
That's what I'm saying.
Just roll through everything?
I can categorize the NFL. I can categorize college basketball. I can't take any of them out. There's no NBA tab, so I have to, on a Saturday when I want to look at the NBA games,
scroll through everything.
College football, college basketball, everything. It's ridiculous.
My shovel goes to Detroit Lions linebacker James Houston. James Houston vehemently denied that he pooped his pants on Sunday Night Football. Stop, dude. Stop. You pooped your pants, man. I feel like what is the Sopranos when they pretended that they shot Christopher?
Yeah,
and he dumped his pants, and the ratchet guy said, "You pooped." That's what he did. he pooped his pants. Hey, James, raise your hand if you got to go to the bathroom.
He had a racist stripe too.
Raise your hand if you have to go to the bathroom, dude. Have you seen this, Ed? What is that? That's poop. Your mic ain't on. Your mic ain't on.
I'm sneezing, sorry.
Yeah.
Every marathon you see this, right?
Yeah.
Every Olympics you see this. It just happens.
Don't deny it, though. Just like, hey, you know.
Why didn't he change
happens.
His pants, though?
I think that probably that's why he's denying it, because he didn't change his pants. The offense got on the field, James.
I like it like this.
Hey, a friend of mine told me she went out of town, and someone in her party didn't feel like going to the bathroom. So sat down outside and peed on herself.
That's very nice.
Huh. And but, didn't go home.
By the way.
Really? So, Ed, I'm sure you have ideas about that.
I had a coach tell me once, if your uniform's not dirty, then you didn't play.
So,
yes. He clearly played. That's a dirty-ass uniform.
Daily Line with Jeremy Kahn at 9:15, but on the other side, another win for the Terps. Kevin Willard, head coach, joins us up next on The Fan.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.